Welcome back to this portion of Vocal Point. Right now, we welcome again Dr. Peter Lilback. He and I had the privilege of writing a book together, which became a bestseller, thanks, honestly, to Glenn Beck. The name of the book is George Washington's Sacred Fire, and it documents in 1,200 pages that George Washington was a Christian, and it was always held that way for a couple hundred years after his death, but only in modern times has the history been rewritten, which I think, frankly, is a byproduct of cultural Marxism. Dr. Lilback, so great to have you on again. I appreciate it.
Jerry, it's always a pleasure, and what an honor to share our common love for Washington and his foundation faith that shaped the nation with all your listeners today.
One of the most meritorious critiques against George Washington being a genuine Christian was the notion that he supposedly didn't receive communion. I know we've already addressed that a little bit, but I want to focus in depth in this particular segment on that subject. Did George Washington receive communion? What's your comment?
Yes, absolutely he did. But there are reasons to honorably, as you say, there's merit to the case. Was he the best communicant in the world? Were there times he didn't commune? Did he make it a primary concern? Those are good questions. So I think this is not a specious argument, but an important one, and one that we should take some time to address. So let's just begin with the first point of the earlier years of Washington's life. We need to remember that Washington grew up in the Anglican colony of Virginia. That was the established church. His mother was a very devout woman, known for her daily prayers that she would have. We know that Washington's dad had died as a relatively young man, so Washington was maybe 10 or something like that when his dad died, so pretty young. And so he was raised by his older half-brother, and he was raised in conjunction with Lord Fairfax, who was a British nobleman who owned a great deal of what would be the old colony of Virginia. There's still Fairfax, Virginia. His name exists to this very day. And the reason those things are important for Washington's communing is that he grew up with a godly mother. Secondly, his schooling, such as he had, included at times an Anglican minister who was part of his schooling. Thirdly, his leadership models that he had in his life, his older half-brother, was actually a military officer in the Navy, and he was the one who actually gave the name Mount Vernon to the estate because he named it for the admiral that he served under in the British Navy, Admiral Vernon. And I think what's intriguing there is that a regular part of the Navy and the officers of the British force was that they would worship daily using the Book of Common Prayer. That was the church was a key part of their life. And that Lord Fairfax was known as a very godly and faithfully worshiping Christian, and that, in fact, when Washington assumed his military leadership, one of the things that Lord Fairfax wrote to him as he was going out is he said, remember, as an officer, you have a duty to show to the men the importance of faithful worship of God, and that he was a role model. And so the worshiping life of the church, Would they have had a life where they would have trained a man to be a churchman but say, don't ever worry about taking communion? Well, that's a non sequitur, of course. That would have been part of what he was trained to, which would include that point where he would have been confirmed in the church. and with confirmation, then there would have been the opportunity to enter into communion. Now, this raises a whole host of issues. Now, in Virginia, the state was far away from London. We didn't have all the high church celebrations of high Anglicanism. This is a much lower frontier kind of worship service. They didn't even have a bishop in Virginia. So formally communion and confirmation are supposed to go together, but it was not easily achievable because there was no bishop to confirm. And so what happened in the Virginian context is that people would come into the life of the church, and they would begin to participate, and they were not taking communion every Sunday and with a, like a high liturgical church we often think of with the Anglo-Catholic tradition. But their tradition was to commune basically about once a year. It was not the kind of every Sunday communion, but it was periodically there was a communion service. So
that's seldom.
Communion in Washington's life was not something that was every Sunday. It would be periodic.
That's amazing. Now, we know that later accounts, after he served, you know, in the presidency and so forth, he was back at Mount Vernon, there are accounts where he would take the young children, his adopted children, and they would go home after the sermon, after the first part of the service, and then his wife would then stay for the communion. And so some people criticizing George Washington's faith said, see, he didn't necessarily believe in the atonement because he didn't stick around for the communion. Is that a fair criticism? And no, is it accurate the way I've described it?
Yeah, I think, one, it is accurate that later in as president, particularly when his life is very busy, he would not stay the extra half hour to an hour of the communion service, but he would actually go home with the kids and let Martha have the full worship experience. And so why did he do that? Some would say, well, it's because he didn't believe. But I think there are several factors going on. One, he was someone had to take care of the kids, and they were not staying. And Martha wanted to stay, so George honored her. That was one. Number two, regular communing was never part of Washington's life growing up, as I've already said, in the low church tradition where they would commune once a year. Thirdly, as a sign of unbelief, most of the church would leave at the communion time. It was the regular custom. That didn't mean that those who were leaving weren't Christians. They were saying, we need to move along with our lives and we don't have time to do it. Maybe that's not the highest spirituality, but it doesn't mean you're not a Christian because you didn't commune, because it was not the regular practice of the day. But probably most significantly of all, while Washington in his earlier life was a church warden, a church vestryman, and therefore participated in the worship of the Holy Communion of the church. In fact, we know from his record he actually helped buy the wine and the elements that were used for communion, because those show up in his records. What happened is that when the war occurred, suddenly he realized he was actually opposing the very head of his church. It was not just the King of England he was standing against, but the King of England was the head of the Anglican Church. And as he was beginning to call the head of the church a tyrant, the head of the state a tyrant, it became very, very tense for his own priest or his own Anglican minister to welcome him to the communion. In fact, according to some of the records, their relationship actually broke down. And the minister who had been in the Pohick Church actually left America to go back to England because he was so disgusted with the American Revolution, and he publicly renounced Washington as being a leader of that. Wow. So their relationship was actually strained and broken. And according to some records, he actually got to the point when he went up to preach on Sunday mornings, he had a pillow with a loaded pistol on it. And he was basically saying, do not bring the revolution here because I'm going to fight. So Washington's conscience put him in a very awkward place. Could he commune in the Church of England when he was out of communion with the head of the church, who actually he thought was a tyrant? And would there be ministers or priests who would welcome him? So the next thing we find in the revolutionary era is that when communion shows up in his life, it's in other traditions, such as in the Presbyterian tradition or the Reformed tradition. That's why when Mrs. Alexander Hamilton says, today I had the joy of kneeling and taking communion with the newly inaugurated President George Washington when he became the president under the Constitution, it's a great milestone. It was an indication that Washington now, with a new Episcopal church in America, no longer an Anglican church, an American church, the head of the church was not the King of England, but now the head of the church were the bishops that were beginning to shape the church. And Washington had identified then with the American expression of his tradition, the Anglican Church, and he communed. So it's his debate, obviously, was not with Christ, or he would never have communed. His debate was with the king, who no longer was the head of the church, and now he could commune. His infrequency of communing is because of his busyness, his low church tradition, And he did not have that same kind of high church piety and communicant worship that is such a part of many Christian traditions. That was just not part of his fabric, although it was part of his tradition.
Would you take half a second and just identify, what do you mean by low church versus high church versus, I guess, broad church, too?
Okay. Well, those are all good terms. In the Anglican tradition, we know that from its very beginning, it is a merger between the Roman Catholic liturgy and the Protestant theology of the Reformation. Sometimes has been called the via media, the middle way between the two traditions. And that grows out of the fact that the Reformation was continuing a lot of Catholic life, but it was breaking from it. And that high combination of the two really reached its best expression in the Anglican tradition, and as well as in Luther's own tradition. The Presbyterian, Puritan, Reformed tradition were much more willing to break with the historic liturgy to be radically biblical, whereas this tradition, Anglican and Lutheran, but especially Anglican, was comfortable keeping many of the Roman Catholic traditions. So when we talk about a high church tradition, it's where the worship and the liturgy is very much like the historic Roman Catholic tradition. But in it, we hear changes that are made that reflect Protestant theology. That's a high church. So every worship service will be including the Eucharist, the Holy Communion. A low church tradition would be much more like the Reformed or Presbyterian tradition. They would not have communion necessarily every Sunday. They would not use all the beautiful vestments, all the high liturgy. It would be much more an auditory church where you're not looking at stained glass windows and liturgical actions, but you're hearing the word preached. It would be a simpler service. And that goes along with the fact, as I said in our previous program, Virginia did not even have a bishop in America. Mm. And even when the Episcopal Church happened, they were not ready to have a bishop. So without the bishop, then some of that higher church life also became less likely to be seen. So that's the low church. Now when you use, so high church, highly Roman Catholic liturgy, low church, much more like a Puritan, Presbyterian, Reformed church, much simpler in its liturgy.
Bible-based.
More biblically focused.
Yeah, Bible-focused. Good.
Bible-focused, yes. And then when you come to the broad church, and in fact we use in our book the word latitudinarian. It's a big mouthful. It meant that they were not so concerned to be doctrinally precise, but gave room for various viewpoints within their tradition. Hmm. For example, today we might call someone, he's a confessionalist. That means someone who really holds their confession with care and sees that as establishing the boundaries of doctrine. A latitudinarian would say, I don't want to be held by the strictures of confession. I want to have a broader view and have room for disagreement on doctrinal issues and concerns. And that was part of Washington's tradition, too. It meant they were more concerned with the moral aspects of the Christian life than the doctrinal precision of the Christian teaching. Now, it wasn't that he didn't hold to Christian doctrines, but he said, that's not my main concern. My main concern is honoring God and living right within the Christian revelation. That's really the model. And that would be then the low church model with a broader church viewpoint. And so Washington, therefore, was comfortable to commune with Reformed pastors, with Presbyterian pastors, whereas a high Anglican would say, I can't have communion there because they really don't have the true communion. Hmm. They don't have all that liturgy that's part of the ancient tradition. A low church person would be broader, not only in theology, but also, let's say, in that ecumenical spirit when it came to the sacraments. So those are some of the terms. Washington would have been a low church Anglican, a low church Episcopalian, and in his personal practice, he would have been very comfortable with a broader view on doctrine, but he still would have maintained a concern for moral character within the Christian tradition.
All right, thank you. Now, we're basically out of time. Let me just add one quick thing, because you did so much research on this in the book, and you even showed a reproduction. There is a stained glass window of a church in Morristown, New Jersey, and I believe it's a Presbyterian church, right? And
that
it shows,
corrected.
Yeah, it shows George Washington receiving communion there in Morristown, New Jersey. So the idea that George Washington didn't receive communion because he didn't believe in the atonement of Jesus Christ is just not historically accurate. Thank you so much, Dr. Lilbeck, for being with us. We'll have you on again in just a moment for another segment, providenceforum.org, for more information. Thanks again. God bless. Bye-bye.